Good morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Friday, March 31st, and the time is 8:05 a.m. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Jennifer Johnson, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative David Tallarico, and myself, Representative Harriet Drummond. Representative Zach Fansler is running late, as Representative Sponholz probably is as well. We have a quorum to conduct business. You know the drill on silencing cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Kelly Burnett, and Matt Kern is our LIO moderator, assisting with the tech and teleconferencing support. Thank you both. Today, we will be talking early education. All session, we've been talking about the importance of educating our young people and how much we have to do in the first few years to educate children, and how much what we do in those first few years impacts the rest of their lives. We have a brief overview of several, we had a brief overview of several early education programs during our budget subcommittee process a few weeks ago, but we barely scratched the surface on what these programs do and how they're impacting local communities. I'd like to thank everyone who came down here to speak with us today, and I'd like to thank Representative Johnston for helping us line up Lisa Moreno to speak to the committee about ARISE. We have a lot of information to get through today, so I'm going to invite Abby Hensley and Debbie Baldwin up to the front to get us started.
Thank you.
Good morning. How are you?
Abby Hensley with Best Beginnings.
Good morning, Madam Chair and House Education Committee members. I'm Debbie Baldwin, and I want to thank you so much on behalf of the early childhood community for giving us the time to share with you the important work that is being done across the state with children and families. We have a lot of PowerPoints, and I believe you have some supporting information in a packet that you received this morning.
All right.
I would just like to open by saying that we know healthy, strong children are needed for a strong and prosperous, elastic economy in the future. We hope our dialogue with you will be ongoing so that our state can develop a vibrant Alaska early care and learning system that all children and families can participate in by choice. Again, the key word there is a long, ongoing dialogue to get where I think children and families and we as providers and practitioners hope our state will get. So thank you very much.
Go ahead. We wanted to show you this picture. I know Jennifer laughed when she's, or Representative Johnston laughed when she saw it. This is Abby for the record. But this seems to me to really reflect what it is that we're about and why we're doing this. I'd like to share this exuberant photo with people because I think, that it really demonstrates why we're doing this work.
Thank you. This is Debbie Baldwin. Today we're going to try to set the stage for you. We have representatives from some of the main early childhood programs here in the state. You've met Abby Hensley from Best Beginnings. I will be representing parents as teachers. Dirk Shoemaker will be talking about Head Start and Early Head Start. We have Lisa Moreno, again from ARISE, to talk a little bit about the collective impact a community organization can have. And then we have Stephanie Berglund on the phone, who will be representing THREAD. In addition to the presentations you'll hear today, we provided, as I mentioned earlier, a few important documents in your packet. One of the documents that we draw your attention to is labeled Early Childhood Programs with Deed Investment. And this document shares the particular attributes of each program. We also provided, in addition to the specific program information, a copy of the executive summary of the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council's 2012 strategic report. And again, the report...
Two documents are at the end of the packet.
Thank you.
Committee members. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, we'll be speaking a little bit in the overview about the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council. What we've provided for you today is the executive summary, a three-page summary. The report is a very thorough report from the council, and we would be happy again to provide you the full document upon request.
So for today, What we've been asked to share with you is something about what each of these programs that Debbie mentioned provides and to whom those the services are provided, what impact each program has and how we know that, and the impact that reduced funding might have on the work. We also were asked to share what might be unique or special about each program and what kind of networking or collaboration work each of them is engaged in. I mean, just to kind of set this again in some context, we know that there are 63,943 Alaska children under the age of six. So as Susan Anderson, who some of you know and was involved with Ready to Read, Ready to Learn and chaired the Best Beginnings Board for some years, this is a number we can get our arms around. As she says, there are more children born in some states every day than we have under the age of six in our state. So we should be able to, as I said, get our arms around it. And to give you some idea about where some of these children are, we are providing this information: the number of children in licensed child care, 13,650. Children in Head Start in the 3 to 5 age range, 3,293. In Early Head Start, which is birth to 3, 853 children. In the Alaska State Pre-K, 289. In school district preschools or pre-elementary programs, 2,477. There are about 2,000 children in early intervention, just over 550 in parents as teachers, and in April, 19,156 children will be receiving a book through Imagination Library. So to give you a sense of numbers.
Thank you. This is Debbie Baldwin. I would just also add, it's quite unique to see us.
Wait, I'm sorry. Question. Representative Johnston, go
ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. Are these just the state-funded programs, or are these federal and state?
Through the chair, they some of the programs, such as Parents as Teachers, represents numbers of children that are provided state support and federal support, a different group for federal support. Licensed child care would be, again, both a state and federal investment.
And private pay.
Yeah, and private pay. So there are some
but you've included all the federal programs, and that's my question. Are all the federal programs included in this?
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Are these numbers, any of them duplicative between programs, or do those all represent individual pre-K students?
Through the Chair, Representative Kopp. Well, if a child is enrolled in a Head Start program, which is a part-day program, he might also be enrolled in a licensed child care program for the rest of the day. The children that you see the Imagination Library, for example, could be enrolled in any of those programs.
Okay. Because those numbers add up to about 43,000.
Oh, you're good.
Well, I just, if we have 63,000 eligible mm-hmm. children, we almost have universal pre-K now. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering about the duplication. So, okay.
I think pre-K has a different definition than zero to five. And I think as we proceed through here, we'll get a little better idea. Mm-hmm. I know it's probably hard to count, but I think when we get to the Imagination Library, Abby can give us some better idea of how kids and families are incorporated into that. But all the Head Start programs are federally funded, 100% federally funded?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct, with some, again, state match.
With some state match, mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, may I also just respond a little bit to Representative Kopp's question. Again, what you're looking at is an array of programs, from very targeted programs such as Best Beginnings, which is, again, promoting early literacy, to probably the most comprehensive early childhood program being Head Start. That looks at the full spectrum of development for children. So it would be very concerning for us to walk away today saying that a majority of children here in the state of Alaska have some sort of early childhood experience. Again, some of these are very limited, targeted program, programs, and again, what hopefully we'll share with you today is the need is much greater for more comprehensive programs across the state.
Okay, so where is best beginnings on that? Thank you, through the chair.
Go ahead, Representative Cobb.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Where is best beginnings in there?
Through the chair, as far as...
Imagination Library?
Yes.
Is that where you are?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ladies, for the benefit of the recorder, just say, you can say your first name each time you speak, because when there are two women, she can't always hear the difference. Early intervention, what age group is that? Is that 0 to 3?
Through the chair, yes, it is 0 to 3. Okay. Special education is 3 to 5.
Okay.
This is Debbie.
Birth to 3, pre-K. And school district pre-elementary, is that the 4, the 3s and the 4s, or just the 4s?
This is Debbie through the chair. School district pre-K is for 3 and 4 year olds.
Okay.
The state pre-K is for 4 year olds only.
Okay. Yeah. So we see there's a lot of different subgroups.
Madam Chair, with the school district preschools as well, it could be 3 and 4 year olds, but it also could be just 4 year olds, depending upon the school district and how they want to organize what funds they have to make available for that.
Okay. All right. Further questions? Dave Tallarico, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just wondering, the sheet that we've been handed for parents as teachers has 206 children served, but we have 550 plus here. Is there?
Yes, this is Debbie through the chair. Thank you for that question. 200 children are sponsored through the state investment. The remaining children, over 300 children, are receiving, again, sponsorship through the the Federal Department of Education, Alaska Native Education Program, against some targeted funding, particularly to benefit outcomes for Alaska Native children here in the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, could I just add one more comment before we go on? As Abby mentioned, there are over 60,000 children, 6 and under, here in the state of Alaska. I think what's unique to our state and very easy for us to predict investment for the future is that there's about 10,000 children per age group. It is very consistent. So, again, if the committee would like to do some work about, forward planning, forward funding, it has been held pretty strong that there's about 10,000 children per age range in the state of Alaska.
Just curious about that number, 63,943. Is that based on reported births every year? And I assume that's a current, that's today's number. It could be different in a year or back a year.
This is Debbie through the chair. Yes, some of the figures that we're representing on population groups for young children in the state are from the Department of Health and Social Services and census data.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So this is Abby. So Debbie mentioned the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council, and we provided you with that executive summary. The council, or the AECCC, as it's affectionately known, was created because of a Head Start reauthorization requirement that there be an advisory council on comprehensive early childhood systems for each state. We've been working on this for some years, as you can see that executive summary was from 2012, and it has become in the last year or two a more reinvigorated, I think, if that's the right word to use. And we want to, as we've mentioned before to some of you, to encourage you to engage with the AECCC. And this is what it really was set up to do and what the tasks are. it's about positive development, improved health outcomes, and school readiness for children. And the range you'll see here is prenatal through 8, because that's what the committees were set up to do, the advisory committees, to support the creation of a sustainable, comprehensive system of early care, health education, and family support. And you can see the need for a sustainable, comprehensive system just in the questions that you've been asking about numbers. Where are children? Who's being served? How many children are being served through what kind of mechanisms, and so on? we really need to have a comprehensive system so we can adequately answer the questions that you're asking. It also is designed to facilitate the integration and alignment of early childhood services, planning, policy, resources, and funding. And that goes along with the comprehensive system as well. I mean, we talk about are these duplicative numbers or not? Being able to integrate and align resources and programs would help us to answer those questions. And then to establish connections between health, mental health, education and family support systems, and public and private sectors. And I think that's one of the things that Representative Johnston was most interested in with some questions earlier, was about what's the whole system? Not just talking about the children that we're serving through the Department of Education and Early Development, but what's happening on the health and social services side as well.
Okay, Representative Johnston.
Thank you. I was just looking to see, and it's probably online, the members of this council.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Johnston, the members are online. It was fairly evenly divided initially, I think still is, between members of the private sector and members of government. And so, for example, I serve on the AECCC as a private sector member, as does Debbie and Stephanie Berglund, whom you'll hear from later. And then there are members of the government sector. For example, Angie Galanos, who's in the room with us, from the Department of Education Early Development, and her colleague in Health and Social Services, Jennifer Moreau, really act as sort of the co-organizers of the council and of the meetings. The council is co-chaired by the commissioners of DEED and Health and Social Services, and other commissioners, such as from Corrections, sit on the council as well. So it was intended to be a pretty broad representation of entities from both the public and private sector to ensure that we really were looking at the broad spectrum of what was out there and what was needed for young children.
Thank you.
All right, continue.
And so we know that you're interested, as we said, in the broader picture. And so while we're going to focus today really on the education side, we wanted to kind of give you a brief forecasting, I guess, of what we would hope would be the conversation when we meet with your committee and hopefully with the Health and Social Services Committee as well. So as we looked at the Alaska Early Care and Learning System, we came up with several different main categories, and then we're slotting in what programs and services are available in each of those components of the system. So this is just, as I said, a forecasting of conversation to come. But one of the main categories was coordination and advocacy, and underneath that you'll see the AECCC that we just were talking about, the Early Childhood Comprehensive Systems Framework, the Head Start Collaboration Office, and then I'm sure you'll have questions about these things, and I hope that we'll answer them when we're all together and able to have the bigger conversation. In terms of policy frameworks, that we have in place, Alaska Early Learning Guidelines, the Alaska SEED Core Knowledge and Competencies, which has to do with professionals within the early childhood arena, the Pyramid Foundations, which has to do with social and emotional development, Strengthening Families, the Alaska State Standards for Literacy and Math, and then we turn to then Program Improvement and Learn and Grow the Quality Recognition and Improvement System, or QRIS, that we've been working in the state for some years, and it was finally launched in July of 2016. And then as we turn to educator professional development, again, the System for Early Education Development, school district-based professional learning, the Head Start Training and Technical Assistance work in the state, Alaska Parents as Teachers State Office. And with child care infrastructure, we are focusing on child care licensing, And with pre-elementary infrastructure, the pre-elementary approval process. So that's the just a glance at the big picture, and we look forward to having more conversation with you about that in the future.
Excuse me one moment. I'd like to note that Representative Fansler arrived. Thank you. Welcome.
And so as we turn to the presentations today, and we've kind of laid out this big picture for you, and are pleased that Lisa Moreno from Arise is going to be able to share with you what has happened kind of on a big picture in the community of Anchorage with a particular population, and how all these various components have been brought together to an early childhood to work on that. And after that, we'll hear about Head Start, Early Head Start, Parents as Teachers, Best Beginnings, and THREAD.
All right. Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
So we need to do the...
Let's see. I'm sorry. Is Lisa... Lisa is online. She is here. Excellent. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where is Lisa?
Unless you want to get really crowded at that front table.
Madam Chair, could I ask Kristen? Kristen, does the next PowerPoint just...
Okay. Welcome, Ms. Moreno. Put yourself on the record and your affiliation and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Moreno. I'm the Director of Strategic Initiatives for Cook Inlet Tribal Council. And I've also been the director of Anchorage Realizing Indigenous Student Excellence, or ARISE, for the past almost 4 years now. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. ARISE is a community partnership. Okay, let me say that again. We are a community partnership. We are not a program. This takes a little bit of a leap for folks to get. We are not a program. Think of us as perhaps a collaborative strategy. We're made up of 15 organizations in Anchorage, and our goal is to ensure that from cradle to community, every Alaska Native child in Anchorage leads a healthy and empowered life with access to unlimited opportunities. We want to make sure that Alaska Native children in Anchorage are nurtured and empowered to make successful academic transitions, achieve social, emotional, and physical well-being, and that they know who they are, their heritage and their culture, and their role in the community. ARISE started in 2012 as a result of a report that found that there was very little strategic coordination between the Anchorage School District and organizations in the community dedicated to Alaska Native student success. THREAD and Best Beginnings have been essential and committed partners to this effort since the beginning. Cook Inlet Tribal Council was the original convener and still does the work to make sure the effort is coordinated and moving forward. Together with our partners, we identified 8 measurable outcomes that we wanted to see improved for Alaska Native children and students in Anchorage. And these outcomes were academic outcomes and social and emotional well-being outcomes. But in 2014, we reprioritized and decided that one of the most important ones that we could focus on right away was early care and learning. And we wanted to make sure that the Alaska Native children in Anchorage were prepared for kindergarten when they walked in the door. This was important to us because we know that there's an achievement gap between Alaska Native students and non-Native students in Anchorage, and the gap is already present in kindergarten and then continues throughout their academic careers and or journeys, and we felt like it was more important and easier, perhaps, to tackle at the age when the children were younger.
And Ms. Moreno, I'd just like to note that I don't think that 43.6%
is high
prepared
agenda.
For
Correct.
Kindergarten either.
We don't either.
Right. Thank you.
But our concern are the Alaska Native students, and so we maintain that focus. And since we made that decision, our work has revolved around engaging parents, grandparents, and caregivers of Alaska Native children, leveraging our partnerships to identify and address challenges that keep children from being prepared for kindergarten. We strive to combine data, careful, intentional communications, and community organizing to identify, clarify, and connect together around community challenges so that we can develop effective agendas for change. ARISE receives no funding from DEED or any other state agency. And the key to our work has been asking effective questions. So we ask questions like, what's the system? Something I hear you all already struggling with this morning. What's the unmet need for services? What's going on with families with children in our community? And what are their strengths, not just their deficits? What do we actually mean when we say prepared for kindergarten? And once we know that, how do we measure it? And why are some children prepared and others aren't? And are those issues solely family issues, or are they also systems issues? And that one's been really important to us, to be able to look at the system as well. We combine data with lived experience because data on minority populations tends to be limited and biased. And it seldom reflects family strengths or the community's strengths. Also, gathering information on young children is particularly challenging because children, just like, and therefore the information about young children, aren't centralized in one place until they get to school. So it's expensive and cumbersome. You feel like a chicken with your head cut off because you have to go all over the place for what you're looking for. The other reason we combine data with the lived experience is because the people living the problem are the experts on the problem. We spent 2 years trying to decide what we meant by preparedness. What does it mean to be prepared for kindergarten? And then how to measure it. So before we could answer those questions, we had to do the conceptual work of developing an image of what we thought an Alaska Native child who was prepared for kindergarten would know and what resources they would be surrounded by. And then we identified and prioritized the factors that we thought supported and challenged being prepared for kindergarten. And these two items together provided a framework to guide our data collection and our analysis. And then it came to the idea of measuring. There is absolutely no perfect measure for the benchmark of prepared for kindergarten. And after years of conversation and a little bit of fighting and a whole lot of hair pulling and throwing our arms up, we finally, in collaboration with the other collective impact initiative in Anchorage, United Way's 90% by 2020, settled on using the Alaska Developmental Profile and saying that an overall score of 20 would be our mark for prepared. We can get into a lot of discussions about this, and I will tell you it's completely imperfect, and we had to start somewhere.
Question. Who provides the Alaska Developmental Profile? Is that through the Department of Education and Early Development?
I believe so.
And is it what kindergarten teachers use when kids show up at school?
Sort of.
Okay.
The Alaska Developmental Profile is an observational assessment. The teachers watch the child, and they have a period of weeks, which I think is 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I want to look over my shoulder and get a head shake from Angie if she's still around or she's gone. Oh, there she is. I got a finger raised. A wave, more accurately. And they watch the child, they get to know the child, and then they record the data and submit it to the state.
And that's in the first several weeks of school, of official school, once they get to where you can count them, which helps your
And have a relationship with them so you can actually accurately view them. Because children's brains develop in the context of attachment relationships with their caregivers, and because children are not centralized until they get to kindergarten, we realized that we had no chance of improving the rates of preparedness of children in our community without engaging families. So we started doing community organizing. We engaged over 30 families our first year with children under 5. Now, if anybody knows families with children under 5, it's really difficult to leave the house, so it's hard to show up for anything. But we ended up with a small but dedicated group of families who gave us their entire summer. They set the agenda. They demanded that they meet every weekend. And with the help of our organizational partners, like THRED, Best Beginnings, and RuralCAP, they invested their entire summer in taking a deep dive into issues around early care and learning. The families did their own research, designed their own research agendas, came up with their questions to ask and learn about. They ran their own meetings. They looked at and made meaning of data. And they, in the process, developed skills, confidence, and community. And when they finished, they told us what they thought needed to be changed. They said that we needed to work harder to get the word out to families about early learning and child development. They said there was a disconnect between the types of information they wanted and the way that it was available. They wanted it easily accessible. One of the things specifically that came up was they wanted their medical providers to communicate some of this information in a different way. But the way it is now, they get a piece of paper that ends up in the bottom of the diaper bag, mm-hmm. and that interface with their medical providers is an opportunity that's not being taken advantage of.
I want to break in here and note that I know when I had my children in the early to mid 80s, there was a significant amount of information that was provided at the hospital obstetrical unit when you brought your baby home, and I would love to know what's currently provided in the hospital to babies and families getting ready to depart the hospital and go home. It sounds like not enough.
What our parents are saying is that the way in which the information is delivered is not one that's actually useful to them, that there are better ways to take advantage of those opportunities to share information.
And I also had a visit from a public health nurse just once to determine, I guess, to just take a look at the home situation and decide if we needed further visits. But again, that was 30 years ago, and I think things have changed significantly in the health field.
The parents decided who they wanted to work with to make these changes happen. And they invited Best Beginnings, THRED, RuralCAP, Parents as Teachers Program, Anchor School District, Hookinlet Tribal Council, and South Central Foundation to work with them to develop an action plan. And the plan in the end resulted in a request to the school district to train all the kindergarten teachers in how to implement the Alaska Developmental Profile, and also training for all of those teachers on Alaska Native and American Indian cultures in the state. It also included a design for a collaborative communications campaign around early learning and childhood development issues and resources for parents. In addition to that, we compiled over 45 pages of data about Alaska Native children in Anchorage. We mapped the population, the rental housing by census block, and then we overlaid home-based and childcare and center-based childcare providers, Head Start programs, school boundaries, and pre-elementary programs. And then in collaboration with a statewide study that THRED was doing, ARISE invested in a survey just in Anchorage to find out how Anchorage families were using childcare and challenges they were facing in accessing it. And we invested in oversampling in Anchorage so that we would have valid data on Alaska Native families. Through all of this, here are some things that we learned. There's 5,000 Alaska Native children under the age of six in Anchorage. And this was really important to us. Nobody had any idea how many kids there were. So this helps us know exactly how many kids we need to impact to reach our goal. We found out that the parents had no idea that their children were being assessed as they went to kindergarten, and the way that those assessments were done were different in different classrooms, not even just different schools, different classrooms.
And Ms. Moreno, this is just in Anchorage?
Yes.
Okay. If I could go back a moment, I thought I heard you say that the ARISE Leadership Council was just looking at every Alaska Native child in Anchorage.
That's correct.
Okay, so that your entire focus is on Anchorage. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
We found that Alaska Native American Indian families in Anchorage were using child care at the exact same rates as non-Native families, except that they rely a little bit more on center-based care. We also found that all families, regardless of race, ethnicity, or an economic situation, face significant challenges finding and affording child care in Anchorage. And this is particularly true for the 0-3 age. There simply isn't enough care for children, for working parents. And then when you find care, there's no comprehensive way to assess the quality of that care except your parental instinct. We found that Alaska Native children by far, this is not within the scope of DEED, but we found that by far Alaska Native children have the highest rates of ear infections in the entire country. And that in Alaska, unless your child gets into a Head Start program, there's no other point at which your child's hearing will be routinely tested between birth and kindergarten.
And it is tested in the Head Start?
It is.
In a Head Start program. Representative Fansler.
Thank you. Through the chair, is there anything that suggests why they have the highest rates of ear infections in the country, or?
It depends on who you ask. The public health folks say that it's environmental factors. The surgeons who are inserting tubes say that there's actually a difference in the shape of the eustachian tubes. But the why isn't so important as the fact that it's been documented. This has been documented as long ago as 50 years. And there are still no protocols for ensuring that the children's hearing are tested. It's something that could easily be done at every single well baby check and should be done, particularly in rural areas and in the IHS system.
Just about my intrepid aide, Kristen, has informed us that we're probably asking too many questions and slowing you down. So let's try to hold questions for Ms. Moreno until the end of her presentation.
So finally, as a result of all of this work, CITC, which hasn't previously been interested in trying to focus on the younger kids, has launched ourselves into the early learning space, and we've now opened the Claire Swan Early Education Center, which will provide its early Head Start Center, which will provide all day, year round care for 70 Alaska Native children from the ages of 0-3. It'll have 2 UPIC immersion classrooms, and we're also in the planning process for a McVie federally funded home visiting program. Also, as a result of this work, as I said earlier, the Anchorage School District has trained all their kindergarten teachers, both on Alaska Native and Indian cultures in Alaska, and also on how to implement the Alaska Developmental Profile. And finally, we have created this elegantly simple collaborative campaign for families. Which I understand I can't play, but this is the type of post that would, this campaign is on Facebook, and each of the partners take a month and focus on a particular domain of early development. And then all of the organizations and the parents share the posts to get them as far as spread widely as we can. Organizations involved right now are Best Beginnings, THREAD, Cook Inlet Tribal Council, the Anchorage School District, the Siri Foundation, and the Anchorage Public Library. And this is our goal, to meet the parents' request that we do a better job of getting the word out about these issues. And so far, we've covered topics from large motor skills, self-regulation, expressive and receptive language skills, curiosity, learning, and persistence. So finally, I want to leave you with this ARISE is a collaboration, and the work that we do wouldn't have been possible with or of the same quality without the organizations that currently receive DEED funding. They have been our partners, and they make us work better. ARISE illustrates how DEED-funded programs work together at a community level and how they add value to efforts beyond the reach of DEED funding. And finally, CITC is very excited to be an early Head Start provider because we know that the care for the youngest in Anchorage is the most expensive and the hardest to find and the biggest burden on our families. And we believe that we can contribute to giving these children a fair and great start. However, I want you to keep in mind, and this is my parting thought for you, that even a new center that has slots for 70 children is a drop in the bucket for the unmet need in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moreno. Any further questions? Representative Johnston.
First of all, I probably should do some disclosure. I was, in the beginning, involved in this process and have actually stepped away over the last year. Secondly, going through this and now coming from another perspective again, I realized in putting this project together, collectively left out a huge part of this, which is the health and social services. And going forward, is there any interest in collaboration with South Central Foundation, the Native Health Consortium, and Department of HESS?
We're willing to collaborate with anyone who is capable of showing up and working with the community to improve things for the children in our focus. Yeah. And we have, in fact, talked to South Central Foundation, Child and Maternal Health, and Ear, Nose, and Throat extensively about the issues around ear infections. Mm-hmm. I know the last we spoke, they were planning to try and figure out how to include routine hearing tests in their well baby and pediatric checkups.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you for your presentation. I'm sure there'll be other questions. Let's see. Dirk. Okay, quick at ease for technology. Back to order. Welcome. Put yourselves on the record. I know Debbie has already introduced herself, but go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Education Committee. My name is Dirk Shoemaker. I'm Executive Director for Kids Corps Head Start and Early Head Start in Anchorage, and I'm representing Alaska Head Start Association.
Thank you. Again, this is Debbie Baldwin. I'm the Child Development Division Director at WorldCAP, and both Kids Corps and WorldCAP serve children in the Head Start and Early Head Start program.
I'm really pleased to have Debbie joining me up here. In my 23 years of tenure with Head Start, it's all been in urban Alaska and with Kids Corps, and though I've had many collaborations and with my peers throughout the state, my knowledge of rural Alaska and the impact Head Start has statewide is more secondhand, and I'm really pleased and grateful to have Debbie up here to speak about the statewide reach of Head Start. A lot of the themes that I'm going to touch upon were reflected by Lisa Moreno in her presentation, and you're going to hear a lot of the same things, which is a vulnerable population, the same theme about comprehensive services and having that as part of our definition of school readiness, looking at the whole child and the family, the importance of a strength-based perspective, that although families may be struggling with poverty or other issues, They're the primary nurturer of their child, and they are problem-solving every day and making things happen for their families. And finally, the importance of a systems approach and how important that is for us to make progress. So you hear a lot of the same themes here as we talk about Head Start. So Head Start, in early Head Start, we really think of them together as a birth to five program. So there are 17 grantees across the state. Some just have Head Start, some have just have early Head Start, some have, many have both. But when we think about it, whether we're early Head Start or Head Start, we're thinking about birth to five and the importance of all the different developmental activities that are taking place in that during those years, and how that contributes to school readiness, because that's the goal of Head Start, is school readiness in that broad definition, that children are ready to be successful in kindergarten, and we hope then continue to be successful as students later on downstream. It's a comprehensive model, meaning that, or as we're going to talk about, whatever the obstacle may be to that child's growth and development, we as a program, we don't solve all those, but we help facilitate addressing whatever that obstacle is so that that child and that family can be successful. And again, we're talking about a vulnerable population here that Head Start is serving, that they're maybe economically at risk or dealing with other issues that may impact their child's development. And the other feature about Head Start is it really is a two-generation approach, meaning that we're working with the child, but we're also working to build relationships with the family to strengthen them, both in their goals for their own self-sufficiency and also as parents and as the primary educator of their child. So there's center-based Head Start and home-based Head Start, and first there really is a minimum kind of level of service that's required as a Head Start program. So with, as you can see up there, for center-based Head Start, minimum hours, minimum days of service. By 2019, there's an expectation that at least 50% of the programs, Head Start programs nationwide, will be providing at least 1,020 hours of service during the year. So the emphasis is on intensity of service and of duration, and it's tense enough and long enough to make a difference. Home-based services, which are primarily an early Head Start, you can see the requirements there. It's an annual program year-round, and the home visitor going into the home and working with the child and the family. Required that there's a research-based curriculum, and it's not prescribed what that curriculum is, but there's an expectation for programs that there is a system for evaluating the curriculum, that it is meeting children's needs, and that is being implemented. So there's not just an expectation for that, but programs are reviewed for that. And if it's not present, then they're going to be out of compliance with a Head Start requirement. Assessments, children are assessed ongoing throughout the year, but there are three checkpoints where these observations are compiled so we can look at children's progress throughout the year. One, in order to plan services for them that meet their individual needs, but also as a program to see how children as a group and as individuals are progressing. So in Alaska, we use Teaching Strategies Gold, and we'll get on, talk more about that in a second.
Just one quick question. Home-based services, 46 home visits. That's per child or per family?
Yeah, that's per family.
Annually, okay. And so that is very intense. Okay, thank you. Just clarifying.
Thank you. As part of comprehensive services, there are screenings to provide early identification of health needs, mental health needs. One, to begin planning immediately to meet that child's needs, but also that if remediation is necessary, that takes place. So these screenings, it's important for them to take place within 45 days. And also part of the part of the health and nutrition services is that there's an expectation this wouldn't hold for the home-based program, that children are being served meals at center-based programs that meet 50% of their minimum daily requirements. And then there's also, again, that family component that parents and are invited into the program as volunteers, where they can contribute to the program, but then they're also learning and seeing through their contact with the teachers and with the activities that are going on in the program, that's supporting them as parents and understanding child development and parenting practices. So it's important in building these relationships with families. We have staff who work with parents throughout the year, that families are also setting goals for their family and for themselves, for their own education, and for their own self-sufficiency. So this is what Head Start looks like across the state, and there are Region 10 programs, and then there are the Alaska Native American Indian programs, also known as Region 11. And as you can see, that the majority of programs in Alaska are the Region 11. And the numbers there are from 2016. The numbers in Head Start and in Early Head Start, and as you can see, the Head Start is primarily center-based, and the Early Head Start is about two-thirds home-based. And with the center-based programs are especially for families, might be teen parents or families who are working, who have young children who need care, and that Early Head Start can provide for them in a center-based setting.
Dirk, excuse me, are these statewide figures or Anchorage figures?
Madam Chair, those are statewide figures. Okay. As we mentioned, that Head Start is focused, an Early Head Start, on a vulnerable population, whether economically at risk or have other factors. So as part of the enrollment, you see about two-thirds were enrolled because they met poverty guidelines, but significant numbers were enrolled for other reasons, in terms of being foster care or being referred by the Office of Children's Services or being homeless. So that the primary focus then with these programs, wherever they are in the state, is that it's serving the children who are the most needy. These are some of the outcomes that we can look at throughout the year. And the one that I also want to point out is the mental health consultation that is really important in terms of the social-emotional development of children. And we hear about the exposure to adverse childhood conditions and the trauma that children might experience, and especially children from the backgrounds who are coming into Head Start, that the provision of this, the mental health consultation, which is a part of the system in Head Start, is a way of preventing children from coming to kindergarten with these challenging behaviors where they're working through these experiences, and by having the support, they're able to have the social-emotional skills to excel in a school-based setting when they get to kindergarten. Obviously, the school readiness program, the teaching strategy is gold, which is something that every program in the state is doing, and they're doing observation-based assessments of the children and compiling that three times a year, and then those are tracked by the state so that we're able to report on the progress that children are making in these early learning domains. And we're seeing from fall to spring significant growth in these school readiness categories, and so it's a really powerful tool for looking at children's growth and development and the impact the services are having on them. And then there are also the impacts that Head Start is having for the families in terms of emergency services and some of the other family support services.
Thank you, Dirk. Just to interrupt a moment, I'd like to recognize that Senator Tom Begich has joined us. He's a member of the Senate Education Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of Head Start, it's largely a federally funded program with local sources as well, and there's a 20% required match with the state funding. Plays a really significant role in meeting that 20% match, as well as just the additional resources that are important. So if there were a reduction in state funding, that there's a potential for losing that the federal funds that are a leverage to the 20% match. There's also just Head Start's kind of being a comprehensive program, it's not a program where services can be taken cafeteria style and picked and choose. You can't decide not to do screenings, can't decide to cut back on meals, cut back on other things. So there's a limited amount of flexibility that programs have and still be able to meet the requirements of a comprehensive system.
Representative Johnston has a question.
So a lot of your intervention is both health and mental intervention. Do you do that in coordination with other departments, or do you have a separate entity that does the the screening and basically the screening and the care?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, thanks for that question. Although we provide comprehensive services, the idea isn't that is provided through the program alone, and that is always done in partnership with community-based services. And so we might do the screenings, for example, but if there were a need identified, then the goal would be to connect that family with a provider in the community. Whether that be a pediatric dentist or whether that be early childhood psychologist, so that Head Start isn't providing the services directly, but working with the family to identify the need and then connect with a community-based service.
Madam Chair, could I respond to that?
Go ahead.
Based on our experience in rural Alaska, we have MOUs, MOAs, Memorandums of Agreement with Indian Health Providers, YKHC, Norton Sound Health Corporation, Manelik. There just aren't enough providers out in the Indian Health system to answer the need that even Head Start has for screening and mental health screening. We have been faced with having to use service funds at RoCAP to create contracts for private providers to come out to be flown to rural Alaska to conduct health screenings. We are currently working not only with private providers, but we have a collaboration with the University of Alaska Anchorage, the nursing program. Early April, we're flying nursing students out with their supervisor to conduct screenings in rural Alaska for our Head Start children because there's not enough providers out there to do it. So it is a huge issue for us in rural Alaska.
Follow up?
Go ahead, Representative Johnston.
And how much of this is Medicaid reimbursable?
Some of it is, but not all of it is.
It'd be great if I could have a breakdown. Thank you.
Go ahead.
You talked about many of the things that are unique and really come back to that statewide system of teaching strategies goal and how that does give us a chance to look at the progress for a large cohort of children throughout the year in making gains in school readiness skills. And really also on the support that Head Start can provide through mental health consultation, as challenging as it can be to find that, and supporting children who maybe have experienced adverse childhood experiences that may have affected their social-emotional development, that support and the fact that Head Start doesn't expel children or suspend them because of challenging behaviors It's really, if not a unique factor, an exemplary one. In terms of the parent involvement.
Representative Johnston. This is the second slide where I've seen teaching strategies gold as your assessment tool. Is this a national assessment tool, and is it something that others in the state use?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, it is a national tool in terms that it was developed by a curriculum that is used by programs nationwide. But it is something that Head Start programs can opt into across the country. Some do, some don't. Some use other assessment systems. Every program in Alaska uses Teaching Strategies Gold.
Follow up?
Go ahead, Representative Johnston.
You probably heard from the previous presenter that sometimes the assessments aren't maybe... they lose maybe a cultural aspect, and then also that there's been times that it's been there's some subjective aspect of it. How does this measure up in those situations?
Through the chair, the assessment tool is based on observation, which can and should take into account evidence from the family, evidence from other sources, as well as what the teacher is observing in the classroom. So when the teacher comes to the point of making a rating, because that's what you do in Teaching Strategies Gold and a variety of child development dimensions, is there should be a whole host of observations, and that would include input and accounts from the families of what they've seen their children do, and that these would have to justify the rating that teacher would make for that child.
One more follow-up?
Go ahead.
So assessments are done 3 times a year, correct?
Through the chair, that is correct. The checkpoint is done, and the observations are done throughout the year.
Is this the tool that's used at those checkpoints?
So the Teaching Strategies goal would provide the framework, and so it provides the dimensions, the indicators that the teacher is providing a score on. And then it would provide the scale of what skills the child was developing, 1 through 9. It would provide a definition of what those numbers mean.
So what I'm looking for is progression. And I'm also looking for any, I'm a firm believer in resiliency and how we measure that.
Through the chair, could I answer? This is Debbie.
Go ahead.
Again, we're very fortunate to have the opportunity to have an assessment and not a screening. A screening is a yes or no. At the moment, can you demonstrate that skill set? The assessment, again, is helping us to understand learning gains. It's really to understand where the child is at in their development. And so we're measuring learning gains, and again, at some point you want to know whether that child is demonstrating skill sets age appropriately. As our previous presenter talked about, school readiness is a tough definition for us right now, but we use it, again, to help the parent and the providers understand, again, the skill sets we're seeing children demonstrate and the growth that's occurring over time in the program.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead. Just a time check. Each of our presentations had 20 minutes. We're about 10 minutes over as of now, so talk faster. And we'll question faster.
You can go ahead. I think we've looked at that. And the other qualities, and just in the interest of time, that may get started is there's, and I'll just sum this slide up as accountability. There's really a high level, both federally and locally, of accountability for Head Start programs. And then finally, Debbie mentioned some of the MOAs, and some of these are mandated with your LEA and with the Office of Children's Services, but the goal is to get services in place in every local community and finding the partners to do that. Thank you.
Any additional questions? All right, let's take a brief at ease to get the next item online. Back to order. The other slide, the other screen will come up momentarily, so let's proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Debbie Baldwin. I am the Child Development Director at Rural CAP. I am joined by Dirk Shoemaker from Kids Corps. Both Rural CAP and Kids Corps, as we mentioned earlier, provide Head Start and Early Head Start services, and we are also pleased recipients of Parents as Teachers funding by the State of Alaska. I just wanted to start out by just briefly explaining how Rural CAP got into the business of Parents as Teachers. We've been providing Head Start services in rural Alaska throughout the state of Alaska, from Ketchikan to Savoonga, from Kodiak to Tok, for over 50 years here in the state of Alaska. We have highly talented people working both in our local communities. We do local hire, and also very talented people in our central office providing support. What we're seeing over the years consistently is children entering Head Start at least 16 to 18 months developmentally behind. We didn't seem very successful at changing the needle on that, and so we took on early Head Start, figuring that, again, a home-based model working with the parents early on when the child was young could perhaps, again, engage parents in helping their child lead their education, and we'd see children coming into Head Start perhaps a little bit more closely performing on age. We are lucky to have 6 early Head Start programs. That we haven't had success in getting expansion for early Head Start, but we did discover this wonderful Parents as Teachers model, and in the communities where we have a Head Start, we do not have an early Head Start, we decided to, again, try to strategically place Parents as Teachers in there. We have seen marked gains on the developmental levels of children coming into Head Start based on, again, coming into the home environment, working with a parent to lead their child's healthy development, and then, again, transitioning them when they turn age 3 into the Head Start program. So I just wanted to say that's how we got started.
I need to ask a question. Yes. About the numbers.
Yes.
You said, yes, children, you found that children were entering Head Start, that's at age 3?
Correct.
16 to 18 months behind in development.
Yes.
So like 1.5-year-olds level.
That's
at,
right.
At age 3. That's shocking.
That's
and
correct.
That's when you took on early Head Start and implemented early Head Start in order to close that gap.
Yes, and we only had that in 6 communities, and there really wasn't an expansion opportunity provided federally.
Mm-hmm.
It's a higher cost model.
Mm-hmm.
4 times a month for home visits, wraparound comprehensive services. So we were looking for something with similar outcomes that might be less expensive, and we discovered the Parents as Teachers program.
Great.
Thank you for your question, because I think, again, we get criticized in the early childhood field about not preparing children for kindergarten. I can categorically say that there are tremendous growths occurring for children in the 0 to 5 years, but
mm-hmm.
again, if you're getting children 16 to 18 months behind when they come to Head Start, we are catching, I'm sorry for lack of a better phrase, catching them up.
Right.
And again, many are arriving developmentally prepared, and others are just making huge learning gains, but not quite there.
I'm not surprised,
yeah,
because if they're behind when they get to kindergarten, it's got to have started somewhere.
So I know we need brevity. So I will try to accommodate that and may skip some of the presentation. The Parents as Teachers program is in an evidence-based parent education and home visiting model that serves families from pregnancy until their child enters their next educational setting. Grounded in the most recent research, the program aims to support families through direct interaction with parents and children in the most intimate of settings, their home environment. Parents as Teachers has 4 main goals: to increase parent knowledge of early childhood development and improve parenting practices, to provide early detection of developmental delays and health issues, to prevent child abuse and neglect, and increase school readiness and school success. During the 2015-16 program year, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development provided funding to 4 grantees. Rural CAP is one of them, Kids Corps is one of them, AEYC Southeast here in Juneau is another program, and then we have Sprout in Homer. 206 children and 167 families were served, with a vast majority of services being provided to families who had children 0 to 3. Services were provided in 5 communities originally, expanding to 9 communities in 2016-17. 24 children were identified with potential delays or concerns. 56% of families had one or more high needs characteristics, and 78% of families set individual goals for their family. The average cost of providing parents as teacher services per child is a little bit over $3,000 annually. The PATH program is comprised of 5 main components: personal visits, screenings, group connections, resource referrals, and family assessment. Individualized strength-based visits are provided an average of twice a month. The number of monthly visits can also be determined by the high needs characteristics of the family. Parent educators focus on child development, promoting positive parent-child interactions, school readiness, and family well-being. Parent educators help parents to develop confidence or a sense of self-efficacy in their efforts with their newborns and young children, promoting the parent as the first and best teacher for their child. Children's overall development, health, hearing, and vision are all assessed to ensure children are thriving. We do hearing screenings in parents as teachers. Screenings provide regular information about each child's health and developmental progress, increases parents' understanding of their child's development, and identifies strengths and abilities as well as areas of potential concern. Group connections are designed so that families build social connections with each other, engage in parent-child interactions, building a network with other parents, and increase their knowledge of ways to support children's development. Group connections are staffed by at least one certified parent educator or supervisor and are focused on the major areas of the PAT model and on particular family needs. Each PAT program assists families in connecting to needed resources, strengthening protective factors, and fostering positive change. Each program takes an active role in the community, establishing relationships with other programs and organizations that serves families. Research shows that parents and caregivers who have support are more likely to provide safe and healthy homes for children. Family assessments are used to identify and reflect on family competencies and other factors affecting family dynamics. Helping parents to identify their strengths and stressors helps families understand how those factors may affect their parenting. This is singly one of the most powerful, again, opportunities we have, is to help parents understand how their parenting practices may be affected by experiences they had as a child with their parents and other things that are happening in their life. Building resiliency and protective factors are program goals, along with providing support for individual goals that each family sets. Through PAT program self-evaluations and third-party external evaluations, parents enrolled in the PAT program exhibit one or more of the following outcomes. I have, am I on the wrong page?
The next one has the outcomes.
Did I go too fast? Oops. There we go. Sorry. I'm sorry. I have put up here some of the outcomes we at ROCAP are seeing from our Parents as Teachers program. PAT parents are more involved in their child's schooling. They report a higher level of confidence, engagement, and parenting. They engage in more language and literacy promoting activities with their children. Outcomes for the PAT children that have come through our program, and again, I think Dirk and other PAT programs can validate this as well. They arrive at their next educational setting developmentally on target. Again, I use this word next educational setting because parents, teachers, children may be moving into a Head Start program. They may be moving into a faith-based private pre-K program. Or if they're with us till age 5, they may be moving into the school district kindergarten system. Also, children exit out of supplemental early intervention programs before age 3. Here's the cost savings to the state of Alaska. If we can identify, again, health risks for children or children that are at risk for developmental delays early on, we have a good shot, again, of providing support to that child and family so that they don't come into the kindergarten needing remedial education services or special ed services. Mm-hmm. A big cost savings, $3,000 per child annually in parents as teachers, Again, we know that early intervention special ed services can cost anywhere from $3,000 to $7,000 annually, even higher for as you get up in the elementary and secondary.
Okay.
The Alaska Department of Education and Early Development requires PAT programs maintain affiliate status to receive funding. Affiliate status means that the program has implemented the 17 essential requirements of the PAT model, including quality standards related to organizational supports and quality improvement, staff competencies, and the primary components of the Parents as Teachers services. Programs have the ability to access a quality assurance blueprint to ensure we're using measures that stick to model fidelity. I really could have done three slides on the impacts of reduced funding, but I limited myself to one slide. And again, any reduction in Parents as Teachers state funding will result in several impacts to children and families. Again, I represent rural Alaska, and I can tell you they are even more impactful to what is happening out in rural Alaska around, again, families that have very little access to supportive resources. Again, loss of services, loss of educator jobs in underemployed communities, children arriving in formal school environments with undetected developmental delays, fragile families at higher risk for entering state intervention. We have statistics on the number of families, again, that have at this point minor interaction with OCS or state intervention programs, and by, again, serving them through this home-based environment, we're able to keep them out of, moving into state intervention, which is very costly. Again, we need longitudinal data in the state of Alaska for young children. What programs are working? Does it make a difference in high school? We certainly have all the high school graduation rates. We certainly have all the national data, research data that shows the long-term outcomes of investing in young children. We cite that data to you every year we come down here. Every time somebody asks me, what about Alaska children? What do you know about Alaska's children? We know a lot, but we, again, need the opportunity for you to invest in us long enough so that we can bring this rich data to you about children over an 18-year period who have had, you know, high-quality early childhood experiences. And so, again, the start-stop in early childhood really affects our ability to collect longitudinal data. Again, we know there's inequities in access to quality programs. The Moore case was a good example of it, inequity in rural education. We don't want to, again, perpetuate that. Parents feeling less confident about leading their child's education in the K-12 system, we need more parents involved once they get into the K-12 system in leading their child's education, and I think we do a good job starting that out for them. We will see, in my belief, a reduction in the state's well child completion rates. Again, the periodicity schedule is fast, and there are several well child checks, particularly through the 0 to 3 years, and then again further on. We are lucky to get some families when we first enroll them who have been into the well child exam once. And again, there's several, 3 months, 6 months, not, and the periodicity schedule is a very active, again, to catch the ensure the healthy, thriving development of young children. And I think, again, there are huge costs to starting up and shutting down programs. In training up a cadre of professionals in early education and then putting them on unemployment. And so, again, I encourage you greatly. The state of Alaska cannot afford to serve less children and families. I think, as I pointed out, the costs are higher down the road for some of these fragile families and that we see. And I know you support our quest to not see more families in state intervention. This young child that I'm showing you here, his name is Oscar. His parents testified down here in Juneau about the impact of early childhood programs. He was enrolled in Parents as Teachers. They did not know he had a vision problem. They had no idea whatsoever when parents and teachers came in and provided a vision and hearing screen. Again, our results indicated that we should encourage the family to refer him out to the medical provider. And they found out that he had a significant vision impairment and received glasses. And so, again, that's, to me, the potential impact we have for young children in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Wow. Jennifer Johnson, go ahead.
Couple questions. I'm looking at this.
Yes.
First of all, is Parents as Teachers, is it a grant program, so basically an RFP and you have to apply to get the funding?
Through the chair, that's correct.
And so when I look at the communities that are being served, for the most part, they're South Central and Southeast, and I'm looking at whatever race data you have. Is there any as far as children served, is there any criteria for the children that are served?
Yes. Or,
and is it across the board same for every community?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, if I could first answer the first comment you made or respond to it. The communities served by the state investment are strategic. We, again, one out of the four grantees, that would be RuralCAP, has really sought additional funds federally to try to figure out how to provide parents as teachers. I mentioned earlier we have a Department of Education, Alaska Native Education Program grant. It's a three-year project demonstration. We've been lucky to project demonstrate for a couple of cycles of the three-year. Those services, again, are only available for Alaska Native children, so we have we provide 15 to 16 other PAT programs in rural Alaska. The state dollars are the only dollars that we can use to provide parents as teachers services to families regardless of ethnicity or race. And so, again, I just want to say that's why we've used the state investment the way we have. Your second question? I'm sorry.
Yes, second question was the criteria for the families.
Thank you. The original Parents as Teachers model developed out of St. Louis, Missouri, was meant for all parents regardless of income. Again, because you may have a higher income does not necessarily mean you're a better parent. But we have been forced or molded here in the state of Alaska to prioritize families because we don't have enough resources currently being provided to us. And so, yes, we are trying to serve the most vulnerable or families that I mentioned earlier have high-risk characteristics, such as teen pregnancy, low income, a parent with a medical condition, a child with a medical condition. There are several factors. There's about 17 of them that will determine, again, entry into the program or the number of home visits that the program may choose to provide.
Follow up?
Quickly, we're at when we need to begin.
Recruit isn't the right word, but do you go out in the community and find these families, or do the families come to you?
Both. We have, through the chair.
Go ahead.
We have referrals from the Office of Children's Services, family-type preservation programs, and we do have an active recruitment plan where we come into, for example, Cook Inlet Housing Authority properties to try to recruit families to put on family and child events to get interest in the program. Rural Alaska, it's much easier. People generally know there's one program in the community, and so they're very active and intentional about trying to get into the program. But I think we have a wonderfully broad representation of referrals to us and recruitment in the community.
Last follow-up. So there is a federal aspect to this also.
There is no, through the chair, there is no dedicated federal funding for parents as teachers. Even the Parents as Teachers National Center out of St. Louis provides no grants to local Parents as Teachers program. Again, I want to be sure to represent RuralCAP. We have a very aggressive development attitude. And so we are out there trying to find any funding we can get whatsoever to provide parents as teachers services. And as I said, we, because we primarily serve Alaska and Native families in rural Alaska as part of our mission, we sought out the Department of Education, Alaska Native Education. But there is no federal parents as teachers funding source.
So it's just the early childhood development Head Start, the 0 to 3.
Correct. Zero to five.
Zero.
Early Head Start and Head Start.
But 0 to 3 for this.
For parents as teachers?
I'm going to interrupt. Parents as teachers is actually funded by the state. It's a separate line
I'm looking for
age range.
age range, what we're doing to meet a need that WorldCap has stated as a need.
Yes, yes. Thank you. There's the opportunity to serve 0 to 5 in the model, but we, again, are prioritizing where the need is greatest. At this point in our state, it's in the 0 to 3. And I apologize for speaking so fast. Thank you for the opportunity, and we look forward to a meeting with you again to, again, have a work session around these great questions you are.
Thank you, Ms. Baldwin and Mr. Schumacher. We will collect questions to follow up with. We have two more presentations. I'd like to begin with Stephanie Berglund, who's been patiently on the phone with us since about 8:15. Stephanie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead, introduce yourself, and proceed with your presentation.
I don't know.
Great, thank you. I am Stephanie Bergman, the CEO of THREAD, Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network, and I want to thank the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to join in this hearing today, and specifically thank you for allowing me to participate by phone. I really appreciate your focus and interest to learn more about the specifics of early learning and have appreciated the conversation so far. Thank you. Abby is going to assist me with my slides. Are you able to see the first graphic slide?
Yes. We have the gray and red.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, this is Debbie Baldwin. I believe we are looking for her presentation. We do have a fact sheet that she put here, but it is not her PowerPoint. So,
okay, let's take a quick at ease to my.
I'm sorry.
Back on the record. Go ahead. Ms. Berglund, we're going to switch to Best Beginnings presentation while we queue up your slide, your PowerPoint. So we're going to switch
to Abby. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Abby, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you. This is Abby Hensley. I'm the Executive Director for Best Beginnings, and along with everybody else, I'm just grateful that you're having this conversation. Best Beginnings is a public-private partnership that mobilizes people and resources to ensure all Alaska children begin school ready to succeed. And you'll see this ready to succeed language again that you've seen before. I think it's important for you to know that Best Beginnings' core values include collaboration, strategic thinking, innovation, and sustainability. And as you, as we talk about the various things that Best Beginnings is engaged in, I think that you will see those core values reflected. We've been in business since September 2006, and our partnership with DEED really did start then. We worked with the state on developing the Alaska State Literacy Blueprint, and really, almost on behalf of the state, do the work for the early childhood portion of that blueprint. We provide early literacy information on behalf of DEED, partner in various activities. You'll see PSA at the movies is one of my favorites, where the department helped us as we, but one of our PSAs about words count on movie theater screens across the state. And also have worked on with the pre-elementary grants that the department has in both helping to develop some of the criteria as well as reading grant proposals. And the map that you'll see here is a map that shows where Best Beginnings and our Imagination Library programs are. Imagination Library is just one of the, it's what people know Best Beginnings for best, seems like. But this is, it's just one of the things that Best Beginnings invests in and supports. So here's the map of where the Imagination Libraries are across the state. And when you see the diamond with the number inside it, it means that that particular community really works in a variety, in several communities. So in Southeast, for example, you won't see many diamonds, but in Southeast, virtually every community except Ketchikan is participating in Imagination Library. And what Imagination Library is, and I think most of you know, is that it's age-appropriate, new, high-quality books for children, children from birth to age five. I wanted you to kind of see the how things have gone with enrollment. Best Beginnings got engaged with statewide Imagination Library work in April of 2009. And you can see there were some 3,600 children involved at that time. The high point was in May of 2015 when we were reaching about 44% of the children under the age of 5 across the state. You may also recall, those of you who were in the legislature at the time, that that was the year that the next year for FY 2016 was when Best Beginnings funding was cut quite dramatically. So that right now we're books are being provided to just over 19,000 children. It's free to families. So we didn't want this to be just a book distribution program, so that virtually all of our partners across the state engage in some kind of family engagement work. And I'll give you some of the survey results from family engagement activities in Anchorage in just a little bit. One thing that I realized that I hadn't put anywhere on any of these slides is how much this costs, and it's $30 per year per child. So it's a fairly low investment for, and you get a lot of bang for the buck. I think that these statements are ones that are particularly important when we think about books and children these days. And this is from a research in social stratification and mobility from 2010. So it wasn't really a report on either Imagination Library or on literacy, but I think that this is important for us to keep in mind. And the impact that Imagination Library has had in our state is kind of all points the same way. But as others have said about assessment, about screening, about evaluation, you know, one of the reasons that we have not engaged in a large study of Imagination Library and its results in our state is because it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. And because we don't really have enough children to say, okay, we can't do a gold standard kind of a thing, which we say this group of children is not going to get books and this very, very similar group of children is, and let's wait 5 years, let's wait 18 years and see what happens. But we did in 2009 and 2011 with some professors from the University of Alaska Anchorage. They conducted some surveys, and parents reported that their children who were enrolled for longer than a year were more enthusiastic about books and learning. There was more reading that happened in the home, and the parents felt that their kids were better prepared for kindergarten. And in Juneau, where they have a smaller population, we're better positioned to communicate with the school district and have a relationship there, they found that children who had participated in Imagination Library since they were born really did better on that Alaska developmental profile and the literacy and language development goal, and that there was more reading in the home. In this last year, REL Northwest has developed an evaluation plan for Alaska for Imagination Library, and we're working now to see how much it's going to cost and where we might be able to find those resources. From a national study, they showed that participation in Imagination Library not only helped children with literacy and language development, but also with math, and that the association remained, after they controlled for various demographic, participation in preschool, all kinds of factors, and that they said that these results, and I think this is an important statement, offer support for policy interventions designed to advance kindergarten readiness through literacy. In our own kind of homegrown research, I think, you might call it, is that in Anchorage, where Best Beginnings is managing, the Anchorage Imagination Library has become a program of Best Beginnings. And so this is just some things from the family engagement surveys from December, when families participated in events around working with their children and increasing their knowledge of parenting, that 92% of them felt like it really had increased their knowledge, and that 84% reported that getting Imagination Library books really meant that they spent more time reading with their children. I mean, it makes sense, but they also told us that. We surveyed parents of Alaska Native children in January, and these are the kinds of things that they said about that. So some of the resources and outreach activities at Best Beginnings does and supports, you'll see here. There are a couple of things that I just wanted to point out. And with the Facebook work that we do, we're part of the communications project that Lisa Moreno referred to earlier, we still are a very active partner in that. Activity guides and activity cards that we produced in Spanish and UPIC to support families for whom English was not their first language, and then some of these other projects. Babies on Track is a 14-minute video for parents of children under the age of two that's packaged with two Alaska-themed board books that I think many of you have seen before. And then Words Count, which is designed to help close that 30 million word gap, where these are the kinds of things that we did with that. Story Tracks is another project that we have available free to virtually anybody, particularly in on the road system, where they can come and pick up the things, where we've taken apart storybooks and people can read and play all at the same time. We were asked about our collaboration and networking, this is just a short list, I think, of the activities that Best Beginnings is engaged in, both in statewide and where we live, which is in Anchorage. And you'll see both the ARISE and the 90 by 2020 Collective Impact Initiatives, and Best Beginnings has a leadership position in both of those projects. We were asked about reduction in state funds, and I just wanted to say that if you have still in your all the materials that you have, the piece that has been distributed earlier about Best Beginnings and sort of our year in review for FY 2016, you'll see on the back of that state funding really provides about half of our budget for FY 16. Now, just to look at what happens when funds are reduced, that reduction in FY 2015 from the $937,000 to $320,000, which has been Best Beginnings funding for the past 2 years, you can see that fewer children are receiving books and all the other things that go along with that, with the family engagement work and such, that we were no longer able to support six community partnerships all across the state, reduced work that they did, of course. We dramatically reorganized and reduced our staff. We dramatically reorganized and we reduced our staff. And we have less capacity to support the statewide early childhood education and outreach work that we do and the work that we do in support of our partners across the state. And just to let you know a little bit about funding, the bill for Anchorage Imagination Library that, as I mentioned to you, is under the auspices of Best Beginnings now, the bill for this year for books is $240,000. So, you know, we can make up, and we have, and I think with a reduction to $320,000, we're able to keep working. There are some Imagination Library partners who have stopped participating, but for the most part, people are trying to work and make sure that the children who could use these books the most are getting them. But we can't make up another $320,000 in community fundraising. So I just wanted to leave you with this picture. That book that baby's chewing on, digesting really, I guess you could say, is one of those books in the Babies on Track set. And I just wanted to say that Best Beginnings really is an efficient and effective steward of both state and private funds, and that we have worked very hard to be a good partner with the Department of Education, Early Development, and with you all as legislators. So thank you very much for allowing us to share with you, and look forward to a more robust conversation, not just a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Abby. I'm going to hold questions because we need to let Stephanie give her presentation.
Just a disclosure.
Go ahead.
My daughter-in-law is on the board.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Quick at ease to get the slideshow online. Have the paper version, and all of these will be uploaded to BASIS after the meeting. Stephanie Berglund, are you still online with us?
Great. Thank you again.
Okay, go ahead. We have your presentation in front of us.
Great. Thank you so much to all of you. Again, this is Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of Thread. And I'll start with the first slide of the graphic with the large D squiggle on it. This helps inform you a little bit about Thread's formula for impact. We are a private nonprofit and have been working for 30 years across the state to increase access to affordable and quality early care and learning. We deliver our services through the Thread Network. We're a unique business partnership between three sister organizations, and we provide direct services to families, to early educators, early care and learning programs, and communities. On the next slide, you'll see, coupled with that first formula impact slide, that Thread connects Alaska to community-based early care and learning services. For families, Thread specializes in providing tips and tools for finding and selecting high-quality early learning programs, including free referrals. These services are important, as you heard earlier, to support and empower families as their child's first and most important teacher, and they result in more families being informed consumers and selecting the high-quality early learning services that meet their needs. When families are able to find programs that meet their needs and their children, this results in more families able to participate in the workforce and a greater likelihood of having continuity of services for their young children. Thread also provides training, technical assistance, and professional coaching to early childhood teachers and early care and learning programs and classrooms. So these services advance early childhood teacher skills and knowledge and support stronger teacher-child interactions. It's these teacher supports that have proven results in more positive outcomes for young children. Also, Thread provides services to communities to help address their needs for expanded early learning services, and we are proud to be a leader and partner to help advance the larger early care and learning system. We're a committed partner in working toward more efficient and effective systems to help families and young children thrive. On my next slide, I want to specifically talk about our partnership with the Department of Education and Early Development. You just heard many of my partners and colleagues talk about direct services to children and families, and the difference of Thread services is that we provide specific supports for the teachers. We provide professional learning. We're currently working with 14 pre-elementary school district grantees, Head Start grantees, and community partnership leadership. We provide training, technical assistance, and professional coaching to these early childhood teachers and district principals. This professional learning is delivered with a focus on increasing quality interactions between teachers and children, and we use national best practices to most effectively impact school readiness and more positive long-term child outcomes. So you may have heard before that research has demonstrated that qualified and skilled teachers are the most important indicator for quality early care and learning. So that's where we focus. Specifically, Thread uses the classroom assessment scoring system, to train and professionally coach teachers. CLASS is a research-based approach for improving teaching so that children can learn and achieve more. CLASS helps teachers improve what matters most in the classroom, the quality interactions that drive that learning and development. In addition to CLASS, Thread's professional development services include providing training on strengthening families and the pyramid model. You heard a little bit about those earlier. Strengthening families is a proven, cost-effective approach to building protective factors around children by supporting family strengths and resiliency. Research shows that when protective factors are well-established in families, that the likelihood of child abuse and neglect diminishes, and families are supported in preventing ACEs, those adverse childhood experiences. So we want to empower teachers to know how to best support families. The pyramid model is a national best practice framework focused on supporting the social-emotional competence of young children. The pyramid training that Thread delivers is aimed at helping teachers promote the social-emotional competence in early childhood. So teachers learn how a well-established foundation is necessary for developing nurturing relationships, supportive environments, strong knowledge in developmentally appropriate practices, and positive guidance strategies which allow these teachers to resolve challenging behaviors more easily. So these professional learning supports strengthen teachers' relationships with families even more, and quality in interactions with the young children to positively affect their school readiness, success, and beyond. Without partnership with the Department of Education and Early Development, THREAD would not be able to support these quality teacher education supports. On my last slide, I also wanted to talk about our networking and partnership with the Department of Education and Early Development. We work collaboratively in the policy framework and quality improvement system areas that were referenced earlier and are part of the work and goals of the AECCC. We are working to support and grow early learning services across the state. So we support the pre-elementary grantees with alignment to this larger early care and learning system and with connecting to broader program quality standards and teacher professional development systems in the state. This alignment is important as our state needs more quality early care and learning programs for families and young children. You heard a little bit about this earlier from Lisa and others that families and communities are wanting and needing more options for affordable and quality early learning programs. Our current supply of licensed and regulated programs across the state is only meeting 50% of the demand of working families. And this is a need, this indicates a need for more access to early learning that includes all of our goals to expand pre-K, Head Start, and early Head Start and child care, in addition to the family supports and home visiting programs you just heard about. Thank you again for your interest in THREAD's partnership with DEED. We're proud to partner with the department and all of the partners that are here with you today. I encourage the committee to continue to look at ways to strengthen early education in the department and in our state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Berglund. I have a question from Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you. What's THREAD's funding? Where does this funding come from?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Johnston. Are you wondering specific for this piece for DEED or overall for our organization?
Both. Overall.
So, overall, THREAD's funding is we do receive a large portion of a federal pass-through to support strengthening child care. It's part of a federal law called the Child Care and Development Block Grant. So it's a federal pass-through through the state. We received some additional required matching dollars to the state to support that quality. So the quality focuses on, again, that family access, supporting them in accessing quality early care and learning, and that professional learning for child care teachers. But broader than that, we receive other state funding, including from the Department of Education and Early Development. We receive about $250,000 for the professional learning I just spoke of.
Follow-up?
Go ahead, yeah. Representative Johnston.
So do you receive any funding as far as the health and social services aspect of child care?
Yes, through the chair. That federal pass-through of the Child Care and Development Block Grant is managed and delivered through DHSS and through the Division of Public Assistance in the Child Care Programs Office. So there's three focuses of those dollars. That is to support the licensing and regulation of child care in our state, the child care assistance to allow access for eligible families to support them in receiving services, and also quality supports, which includes part of that is inclusive of THREAD's grant support.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions for Ms. Berglund? Okay, seeing none, I'm sure we will get questions to you if any arise. Stephanie, really appreciate your time today. Any questions for Abby Hensley or any of the other presenters? All right, committee, you've done an awesome job. Presenters, thank you so much for taking the time to educate us today. Again, all of the documents will be up on BASIS. We do not have a meeting on Monday, so our next meeting will be Wednesday, April 5th at 8 a.m. We will be taking up House Bill 189, School Bus Inspection Fees, not infection, and we'll have a presentation from NACTEC. And with that, we are adjourned this morning at 9:57 a.m.